listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and
Good
Dr.
Good evening
Vicky
and
Hunter.
Welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, September 4th. We're already into September. Welcome. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicky Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. As always, I'm very glad to be here. Just a point of reference, Dr. Kevin is saying he doesn't have sound in the chat. We'll tell him to refresh. That's always a good idea. And yeah, it's September, Michael.
It is. It really is. I'm telling you, time has been going by so fast this year, but I've been so glad to share this time passing with all of you, our community of curious, like-minded individuals, and you, Dr. Vicky. So thank you, people, whether you're listening live, whether you're on the archives, we appreciate you spending the time with us. As always, the Spirit of Life broadcast is an educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives the death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, we are going into part 2 of our topic on history, the history of metaphysics. We're going to be taking a stroll from what is called the Dark Ages through the medieval period, getting into the Renaissance. It's some of the fun stuff. You got your, you know, monotheistic religions, you got your witch burnings, you got your demons and saints, and, you know, you got your melding occult. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And just to give you a little forewarning, we're going to keep it a little short tonight. So we're going to go over some good stuff, have a good quick conversation, and then pull some cards and kind of wrap it up probably a little bit closer to 30 minutes. But as I can protect my computer from the cat jumping around my office, you know, I thought kind of a good place to start tonight is really the transition from the old world of polytheistic religions, you know, kind of a lot of diversity throughout many regions of, you know, gods, of different thoughts, of different ways of looking at humanity, what it means to be human, what it is to be aware, all these the different things that we're still tackling today. And then we have a series of kind of really seismic events in Western world history. These kind of filter over into the East as well, but I think everybody has a general passing knowledge, right? Christianity rose to prominence through, you know, various things in the Roman Empire, eventually becoming the state religion. But while there had been a couple of monotheistic religions in the past, this was really a huge turning point. And I think also the Roman Empire kind of fusing that old habit of enforcing a state kind of mantra, I think kind of infused with that. Dr. Vicky, I know that you have a lot of thoughts and different ideas when it comes to Christianity through the Dark Ages, through the medieval period, by the way, little asterisk.
Why would you say that, Michael?
Oh, you know, just a couple of decades worth of vibes. I should say the Dark Ages weren't that dark. They were brutal in Europe, and they had some low points and some stuff. At the same time, in different regions of the world, they were having their own golden age and, you know, scientific advancement.
But, well, I think, to me, the greatest, one of the, you know, heinous crimes was the oppression of women. So many cultures previous to Christianity, women were equals, and certainly because I've got a little Viking blood in me, mm-hmm. I can say that. Women would hold a position within a community, at least be regarded, and that all changed, right? So anything that had to do with intuition or traditions that a family might have or their sense of connection or spirituality was kind of broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was a real turning point. So it's not just the bigger picture of what generalized history would say about this happened, that happened, and it's how, you know, pantheistic people were. If they didn't comply, they were slaughtered. Yeah, particularly, you know, Scandinavia was the last to be, as they say, conquered,
mm-hmm.
and Christianity, well, you know, kick it, in.
This is true.
And so there's, you know, I look at it from kind of that angle, because any kind of indigenous related culture was metaphysically based. They would look at the sciences, like how, you know, how to travel the ocean, you know, and navigate the stars, to following your dreams and intuitions and checking in with the, you know, the local shaman or spiritual leader. So there was always that, and very slowly, you know, not so slow when you think about it, that was all oppressed. And even great philosophers that have surfaced, you know, and their writings have surfaced, had to be very careful, whether it's through art and paintings with secret messages,
mm-hmm.
or little secret communities, and there were all kinds of them. And I think even within the church, there was other little secret communities that weren't necessarily of the church, but may have had a religious element to it.
Well, it's not, I mean, there's so many things to touch on, but let's think about right now how you went from a polytheistic world where you have many gods, you have Thor, you have Odin, etc. But now you have a trinity, and you have a bunch of saints. You have a saint for everything. Kind of vibes with having a god for everything. It seems like they just swapped one thing for the other in a lot of ways, but they still, you know, really force a worldview. But let's also remember there's always a lot of complexity with things. There was a time when Christianity wasn't predominantly in the early days, spread with the sword. The Franks kind of changed that, and then everybody else kind of fell with it. Also, you know, the Vikings were a brutal people, but in the context of their time, wasn't as spectacular. But let's also remember, there was a complex series of things. The Vikings, let's not whitewash it either. They were slavers. They advanced into the east and west. You know, they went.
Well, I have to clarify. Viking is a culture. It's not a country.
No, it's an occupation. It's derived from pirating.
Exactly. So the Scandinavians, the Vikings were an offshoot, kind of like rebels.
No, they were. I mean, it was an occupation that was held in high esteem. You know, it was the Nords, and you had the North people.
They
were
very fierce, yeah.
Oh, they were, but it's also, you know, it is a culture clash, you know, and that is something that's real, too. It's easy to kind of boil things down into a good versus evil kind of thing, but everything's complex. Everything's a little good and a little bad, kind of, in varying different percentages. And I think there's a lot to say about the Vikings. I think they were not necessarily more brutal than a lot of the contemporaries. But they were, you know, it's like choose your poison in a lot of ways, but they also, if you grew up in that society, you probably had a good chance at having a really good life. But yeah, they did some rough stuff too.
Yeah. But when it comes to the, you know, element of metaphysics and the evolution of metaphysics, it had to go underground. Everything was very underground. It's either that or you face. I know the, you know, Damien's made a comment about the, you know, Vikings attacked Christians. Because there was that, as Christianity tried to oppress and take over, there had to be a lot of negotiating. So again, some Vikings converted. Well, it's that or die.
Well,
starving to death. But all I'm saying is that it very slowly had to go underground. Anything that someone might have believed or how they lived with nature and the gods kind of had to be in secret.
That is true when different things would convert over. You and I are going to disagree a bit, which is just ratings gold. You know, this is good sweep stuff. But when it comes to when I think of metaphysics, yes, I think of in that vein of metaphysics of more spirituality being open to the paranormal and things like that. In some ways, it went underground. In some ways, it fused. The early Viking kings that converted, they were powerful people. You couldn't really force them to do things. And in fact, they used conversion as a way to kind of tame them because they were so afraid of it. But they found political benefit in a tight hierarchy. So it was, in a lot of ways, it was our opportunistic Viking lords that would convert their people because it benefited their role as opposed to what it would have been in prior days.
I agree.
And again, this coming at it from a metaphysical angle, what does this all mean? It's about how you look at the world and try to think things out. Now, early Christians, I got a lot to disagree with them too. They did continue different things like, what about transcendentalism where you kind of look at the essence of things? Which I know it's not the kind of the fancier side of metaphysics, but it is the core of it. That kind of propagated through, again, it's a specific lens, and it's important to understand that lens. And it was a dark time. I'm the first to say that. But evolution did continue.
Well, I think part of the negotiation by the church is that they would steal the gods, if you will. You know, and in my view, and this is just my view, Archangel Michael, Christopher, whomever else, could very well have been Norse gods, given another name.
You know, early Norse had these paintings of their, you know, they would paint Christ and things, but he had a giant spear and axe and things like that in the early days.
But I'm just saying that everything that Christians do, I mean, whether you go to church and you see the candles lit, that was pagan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's incorporating all these tidbits to make themselves greater, grander, more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a witch can't wear a cape, but a priest can wear a dress. And so you kind of, if people would stop and think about that for a moment, you know, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But it began way back then.
And
that's what I like, that's what I appreciate about history. It's not just, why do you do that today? Where did that start, and how did you just take that on without thought?
Yeah, but this happened over a period of hundreds of years, too. I mean, it was given a lot of thought in terms of sometimes it was the people they were converting. It was them putting these conditions on because, again, a lot of these people, you know, big old armies full of dangerous people, but they're going to put their spin on it. And you kind of see it localized. It was a mix of things, a lot of nefarious things, some just kind of coincidental, you know, some opportunistic. All of it opportunistic, but nonetheless, you did see the complete suppression of all of these kind of diverse thoughts, and you had, you know, albeit you did have a lot of ancient Greek thought that was only preserved by certain monasteries and things, but still, it wasn't being taught. I think fear ruled the day. Imagine trying to build a worldview where you have plagues to worry about, constant invasions, brigands. The fall of the Roman Empire really created instability. Created this kind of whole shock for centuries that prohibited the growth of awareness of human social evolution, of that metaphysical evolution that we're looking at through the millennia.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time,
and
that was going
forward, even to the time of Nostradamus, the early 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right up to then, I mean, everything he did was a lot of secreted information. Everything was in kind of riddles and codes and things for all of his insights. And who knows how they came to him. You know, was he a time traveler? Was he psychic? Was he, you know, who knows?
I think,
but whether it was art or his writings, but he had to be very careful.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And I think that is such important information. Think about like the Book of Revelation, right? I think it was John, who lived 300 years after Jesus, apparently, give or take, it's hard to pin down. But the entire Book of Revelation in the Bible can be looked at as like a political pamphlet against the Romans of the time, and you couldn't speak out against the state. You had to speak in code. I mean, Nostradamus made some predictions, but he was also remarking on the culture of the political oppression of his time.
Yeah.
And that's something that's always been struggled against. Think about us if, you know, having an open discussion about what you think, how many times do people, you know, just downplay it or, you know, what's the word? Dismiss it, cast it off, you know? It's important to continue pushing that envelope. And of course, we want to stay grounded, keep context, but, you know, it is important to continue the trend, you know, that a lot of people fought and died for. Think about Copernicus, you know, dared to say that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe. I mean, Lord. There's so many different things that are coming to mind, but go ahead, Dr. Vicki.
No, I think that this is where if we can consider alternative thinking to our history and not be steadfast in what we think it was just because we read a book. Because even in reading that book, it's what people want us to believe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like history is written by the conqueror.
Well, not always.
It's a political thing unless there's a history written that's more like testimonial or a diary that somebody finally comes across, you know, the other side of it.
But my point is, like, think about us in the modern age. Yes, we know that the Romans dictated everything about the Druids, right? And we get all of our history through them. But we know who the Romans were. So we're able to look at, okay, this is probably BS. This is probably just bias. You know, we can kind of see some kernels of truth. But I don't want to cast aside any kind of concepts of, you know, traditional history. I love history and I'm into it. But
well, wait a minute. What I'm talking, Michael, what I'm talking about is the Romans, Rome turning Christ into some Messiah figure instead of him just being a political opponent. That's my kind of thing. It's like how history is skewed in that way. So it's because people want to believe that. It's easier to believe.
I agree that people want to believe things and it's easier. Absolutely, I do. I think that if there was a Christ, he was one of many messiahs that were proclaiming themselves the Messiah in that era of, you know, the early Roman Empire. It was a common thing. I think one of them blew up. But there was also a lot of, he wasn't always like the Son of God. That there was a lot of debate around that too. But I get what you're saying and I understand that there's always a tint. And I think that in modern history, if we're going to go above that kind of very school elementary kind of level of understanding, we're going to see that there's a huge layer of complexity, and any historian worth their salt is going to point out the fact that you have to take everything with a grain of salt. You have to look at the source material, understand what bias did they have. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of modern historians are doing that. So I think they should be given credit for kind of looking into it and not taking everything that the Romans wrote down at face value. All of the horrific things that they accused the Druids of, they're saying, well, we probably didn't do that. So what truth can we find here?
You know, Dr. Zorn has written in the chat. There's a little bit of things going on in there, Michael.
Yeah.
He says, official church teaching has been enforced on everyone, including other Christian groups, not only pagans, and I totally agree. There is this, Christianity has been allowed to be an authority in some way, and we're not going to get into all the politics of it, but it's a very wealthy corporation, and it tries to bend its influence, and even right up to today. And, I mean, in very many ways. But when we go back and we talk specifically about metaphysics and the evolution of metaphysics, it came up largely by secret organizations.
Yeah.
And people who were advancing in science, for example, trying to convince a king that this wasn't the devil's work.
Yeah, that was an important one. And all of the, you know, the ancient practices being continued in a lot of rural areas away from power centers.
Exactly.
That's a big one too. And yeah, absolutely. Especially in Europe during the medieval period, basically from the fall of the Roman Empire, where the church became the state, de facto state, all the way up until beyond the Renaissance, up until the Enlightenment, up until the various different revolutions and things. Yeah, they in Europe, if you didn't follow doctrine up until at least the schism where you have Protestants, you were going to be burned. You were going to be tortured. You were going to be put to death. It was a dark time. And I think that I think we would be in danger of putting all of this on as saying something that this is something unique to Christianity specifically. I think it is one of the bad players, but I think there are others too. I think that there's a lot of danger and a lot of dogmatic thinking. I think in a lot of the world's ancient religions, there's been a lot of darkness. I can think of, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, we're specifically thinking westernized development or a European.
Well, think
but
about
There were other things on the planet. Asia had its own issues going on.
They did. And they contributed to metaphysics too. I'm thinking more specifically about the Arab world and the Muslim conquests and the impact that had on Western thought too.
Yeah, I agree. So there's been this, I think it's over time, a resurgence of allowing for alternate ways to think and in our evolution or our development. And I think this is also why science and the paranormal got separated because one is more acceptable because it's repeatable and provable and this is not witchcraft, this is not a spell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, I can put this, a bit of gunpowder together and make a spark, and I can repeat that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not evil. It's not magic. It's not something, it's going to be seen as bad.
And
so science took on its own kind of avenue or pathway that was safer for authorities and the public to accept.
Yeah, and just imagine having to live in that world. I mean, we think about limitations on our, speech and abilities to do things today. My God, imagine being in the ancient world where you were forced into a different, one kind of lane of thinking. At the same time, we still advanced. As Damien pointed out in chat, while Europe was having its dark age, the Arab world was going through its own renaissance ahead of the other one. They were going through their golden age and their own scientific advancements. That's why we use Arabic numerals. They contributed to math, astronomy, things we use in metaphysics. Think about their, not that I think astrology is something that's a topic here at the ACMH, but it is something that is in the realm of thought and metaphysics, and they contributed to that too. So a lot of complexity, a lot of different things to it. We run right up into the Renaissance. We're running short on time here, but the kind of interesting thing is, and this is a question I'm just going to pose, do we think that the Renaissance would have happened without the Black Plague to precede it? A plague that wiped out a quarter or more of Europe's population, which was devastating, but also shook some of the old power structures, that, classic church power structure there, made more resources available, things like this. Is this something that needed to happen, or would the Renaissance have come in Europe anyway? I don't think it's an answerable question per se, but it's one that's interesting to ponder. But the Renaissance did open the door to that old knowledge. All those records that the monks at the monasteries were preserving got kind of brought up into the light again. People started looking at those old metaphysical ideas. That's when transcendentalism really kicked off. That's when they looked at Plato, Aristotle. That's when they looked at all of these old different ideas. The Greeks are the most popular, Romans too, but they also looked in different areas. They looked at the old gods, if you will. So I'll stop.
No, Michael is a history buff, and I appreciate that because
you
fill in the blanks for a lot of thought, Michael. And no, I think when you're on a roll, it's a good roll, so don't worry about it.
Don't want to suck up all the oxygen. And I know that we're going to be transitioning the cards here quickly, but it is, I think, in that area of the Renaissance that we think of as kind of this beginning of the Enlightenment. But even at that time, this is when, we had Copernicus. This is when later they had Galileo. This is when people were still being punished by the church for scientific thought.
Yeah.
And it's a dark time, but it's important that we understand both the complexity of the era. I think it's important when we're thinking about morality and metaphysics, how we're going to approach life, that we realize that that desire for conformity, for this feeling of comfort that comes from that, that is dangerous. And I think that is in a lot of different things. I think we need to be careful not to just say that, well, once we kind of move away from this dogmatic Christianity, everything's going to be fine. I think we got to be on guard for not popping up elsewhere. And we need to maintain an open mind and things like that. So those are kind of the main points I wanted to hit. I think we're going to get into some interesting stuff next because we hit the Enlightenment, but even more interesting, I think, and more just like of a engaging, kind of fascinating thing is we get into that kind of era of spiritualism. We get into that era where you get Madame Blavatsky. Am I saying that correctly? I always forget the pronunciation. Awesome. We're going to get into all these different things, and I think that's going to be a fun discussion next week, too.
Well, we'll get into how things kind of shifted in the 1800s and where we are today. So that's exciting.
Yeah. So
I love now that I'm on a roll.
So, I think we've gotten up to, like, I don't know, what, 1600s-ish, and then we get your John Locke types. You get your different philosophers and Voltaire, et cetera. Yeah. But now we are going to be kind of going through some cards, and we're going to be calling it a bit of an early night. And I know I believe you've talked about some of the things that you've been kind of going through, but I know that you're kind of getting settling into a new situation here, and want to make sure that you just went through kind of a big change.
I sure did. Everything of mine is in storage while my new place gets renovated, and me and my cat drove 6 hours to stay with a friend of mine down in the Kootenays of BC, which is oh so beautiful, I have to say. And this friend of mine, we've known each other for decades, and she couldn't have made this transition easier for me. So I'm set up on her dining room table. She's been great to go sit out in the deck and with her dog, and she's worried about me hearing sirens and stuff. I said, oh, no, Michael's dogs bark.
Exactly. Nothing that you guys can do will ever top the shrill barking of my dog, Mira.
Yeah, so this is, I'm all good, everybody. Everything is, I'm decompressing, moving. It sucks.
That's the worst.
I got to tell you. And thankfully, I have awesome daughters whose husbands are also there for me, and I could hit the road on Saturday morning, and they finished moving the last of my things out with the bed and put it in storage, and they left the keys and off we went. So it's all is well, you know. It's good.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful.
An important thing to keep in mind too, you know. I know that feeling, you know, where you just don't know what's going to happen, and I know it's different in different phases in life, but I'm just happy that, you know, you're able to kind of decompress and take a breath for a minute too.
Yeah. I'm very well. Thank you very much. So.
And Damien wants to go to Canada too. So I think we're all going to get together. We're all going to get like a giant house, and we're all going to live together up in Canada. So don't you worry. We're going to get all for you.
He thinks he's going to ride a moose and drink maple syrup.
That also counts for Vermont, I think. But anyway. But we do have some names coming up for cards. You're absolutely right, Dr. Sure. Vicky.
So for those who are new, and I see a couple of new names in our chat, Inner Oracle Self-Discovery card that Michael selects, and then I back that up with a tarot card. We see if there's a little message there for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, pulling from the Inner Oracle deck, hopefully it just makes you think. I claim no intuition of my own, but, you know, maybe the randomness or there's a message in that, the numbers and how they come up. And a shout-out to Wendy, our card keeper. She's been tracking these. And she always kind of finds these interesting patterns that pop up. So starting with Dr. Edward, if I'm not mistaken. And
here you are.
I think we need to keep each other honest because I know I'm trying to keep up. But Dr. Edward, for you, I have number 29, pay it forward. Living with gratitude and responsibility extends generosity to others, even with random acts of kindness that offer no self-benefit except the satisfaction of heartfelt kindness. This may be a time to calm the spirit and lift the heart by giving forward without any particular reason, reminding yourself that love is the center of all life. Is there a way you can pay it forward right now?
Well, the judgment card usually to me is an announcement of some kind or a declaration, if you will. Now, the pay it forward combined with that, my first thought is maybe observing someone who claims to have paid it forward but hasn't. I know that comes out of nowhere. See, everything has an equal and opposite, Michael. We can think of pay it forward as a straightforward message like, I have to pay it forward. But it can also be in the observance of others paying it forward. You know? And so when I see the judgment card, it's being observant of somebody paying it forward, or they are saying they are, but they don't. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So there's a lesson in the observance. So, Edward, I'm going to go on a limb here and say it could very well be that you know somebody or have talked to somebody who has demonstrated the want of an act of kindness, but there was something false to it, and it's given you a new insight. You know, Michael, the people who say, I'm there for you, but then don't show up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That's what I would say. And again, it's another insight to someone that you just didn't know that about them before.
Hmm. That's very true. I think we can all think of examples of that. And Dr. Vicky, I know you're thinking that I offered to help you move and I didn't show up, but my car had a flat tire. I couldn't make it.
I knew that. All right, we have Dr. Jeff next.
All right, for you, I have wild card, number 6, entropy. Within the cycle of life, there are useful energies, or low entropy, that can wane to uselessness, or high entropy. Their energy stands still, and their entropy increases. They no longer give value to the evolution of life. This can include an attitude or behavior that requires adjustment to once again take a new step in renewal and rebirth, thus lowering one's entropy. When one seeks to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, that one lowers their personal entropy, and the world is a better place.
Well, the Justice card with entropy, that's kind of a double thing about balance. Balancing your energy, fairness, equitability, the scale, if you have a visual on that kind of thing, Jeff, in your mind. Balancing your energy, it might just be a moment where taking a breath, a little meditation, making sure you're in sync with yourself, and looking at things around you. Is there a value for value? Or is there something throwing you off your game a little bit? And I just think that this is a small blip that just needs to be checked in with, that's going to make you feel better, like your energy better. So, I know that's it. It's all about entropy, right? It's about balancing energy.
Absolutely. I think that one's come up a few times this year.
But it has.
Good message. All right, I think we have Kevin next. Kevin, for you, I have number 30, greatness to deliver. Every human being is born with greatness to deliver. Greatness embodies the unique self-actualization and self-completedness and does not settle for mediocrity. Greatness goes above and beyond what is common and aspires to nobility of character. Greatness is being part of the solution, not part of the problem. Remind yourself with the question, what do I need to reawaken in me in order to deliver my greatness? You are valued. Delivering your greatness is making a difference in the world.
Well, you have the Ten of Clubs there, Kevin. I think the greatness to deliver in the Ten of Clubs, you're getting there. You just might feel like there's a bit of pressure. And this isn't going quite as easily as I had hoped it would, or quite as smooth, and, you know, a couple of obstacles. But it's really saying, hang in there. It's you're doing your best. This is your greatness. This is your energy, your output, you know, your creation. And I want to say, just hang in there, even though there might be a few tough days. So.
All right. And let's see.
Brad. We have Brad
next. Thank you. I think a new name that I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Please forgive me if I'm wrong. Have a little pattern here. We had 29 and then a wild card 6, and then we had 30, and now we have wild card 7. So keeping it sequential.
Wow.
For you, again, wild card number 7, hope. Hope lives deep within and inspires the human spirit to continue and expand. Hope in and of itself does not create life. Rather, hope desires life. Hope is the root of curiosity, of interest, invention, and yearning for more. Even when all feels lost and futile, hope is resurrected by a change of beliefs and core values. Safeguard your hope, for it is the first and last failsafe of your existence. Do not promote false hope, nor encourage codependent hope.
Well, hope with the Seven of Hearts. Seven of, you know, the Seven of Cups. Seven of Cups, in my view, is dreams, but also learning to dispel the difference between an illusion and a dream, or just a wish versus an aspiration. And I want to go with this, Brad. You know, follow your aspirations, follow your dream, even if it's step by step, a little at a time, but making sure that you can, that's the word for it, be clear about your vision. It's be clear. If there are some uncertainties in what it is you want to create, then it can flounder a bit. So be really certain there's always hope. Hope is, that's really powerful. You know, I love that. So it's hopeful for you to create dreams. Just have that clarity. And, you know, as Dr. Kelly would say, is focus like a laser. You got this. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
We have Dr. Zoran next, I think.
And for you, I have number 24, spirituality. Number 24 in the spirituality suit, truth. There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or life situation. Yet the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. And this card may indicate that there is truth in something or a direction. So, good card.
Well, I'm pulling out the Hierophant in this case, Soren. And this is all about home. Comfort, conformity, routine, satisfaction of the home. And maybe the small little revelations, small little realizations about, you know, your living environment or your home in some way. And, you know, making a few, even tweaking a few little changes. So that make you, I don't know, could be feng shui, you know, that kind of thing. But in the dynamic of relationships or understanding your own boundaries a little bit better, or your own truths. So I like it myself. It's a good sign of evolution.
All right. So. Now, I think our last card is Wendy, our card keeper. Do I have that right?
Yes, I think so.
All right.
I thought I saw Kevin's name come up twice, too. Like, you know, came up again, but...
I think he was saying... I saw he said he needed that card, too. I think he was talking about needing the one that he got. That was a good card.
Okay.
But...
good. I'm glad that's an affirmation.
You know... It's kind of, this is funny, we've been doing the 1-2 kind of sequential thing because we went from 24 to 25 now. And Wendy, for you, I have number 25, also in the spirituality suit, power of belief. Belief is the most powerful force in the universe. One's beliefs are responsible for one's successes and failures. It's also important to realize that you cannot disbelieve in one thing without also believing in something else. Beliefs can help or hinder. Enable or disable. Denial is a belief and means lying to oneself to evade responsibility. Ponder your beliefs to see if they're healthy or unhealthy and proceed with conviction.
Well, I love the Wheel of Fortune. I mean, Wendy. You know, it's all about risks and chances and opportunities are there, but it's also being sensible, you know. So as we go forward, but that power of belief, you believe in yourself and you believe in what you're doing and nothing or no one gets in the way. You know, there could be in any new venture, there's always going to be a negative. Somebody's always going to say, but what if and what if and what if? And yeah, okay, you're going to cross those T's, dot those I's and, you know, address that. But, you know, you just take a chance on yourself and keep moving forward in its evolution in your own way. So Wheel of Fortune is a really, I think, an affirmation of going forward. And of course, you know, as I said earlier at the beginning, things can be equal and opposite. And a power of belief could mean believing in the wrong things, but when you have, or pardon me, the Wheel of Fortune could be believing in the wrong things, but with the power of belief, I don't think so. Again, everyone, it depends what it's paired up with. You know, it's how we put these messages together. One symbol in and of itself may say something, but there's so many variables. When you pair it up with something, it kind of narrows the scope. And then where is the focus? And then that intuitive kind of, oh, what does that mean? How can I put that together? You have to be very objective. If you're trying to find a message in something, any kind of emotional attachment is going to jade the message. So just something to keep in mind. If any of you out there are doing readings for yourself, you know, it's just, you can't be attached to the outcome and you can't be attached to the ride. You just have to see it for as clearly as you can, which isn't always easy. So I hope that helps everybody. I mean,
it's a good message. You know, I always find myself kind of enthralled listening to the kind of the message you're relaying. And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm live. All right, let's go.
I'm looking forward to next week.
Yeah.
I love our most recent history in metaphysics and the evolution of spirituality. And I want to lead right up into the misgivings of the New Age movement. So, you know, we trade one religion for another. That doesn't always make sense.
Yeah,
if you
very
stop
true.
And think about it.
Very true. So, Dr. Vicky also says we're going to do a 4-hour episode next week.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I probably could.
I know.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if next week's a little bit extended.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think it was a fun conversation talking about Vikings and witch burners. Yeah. Come on, that's interesting stuff, too.
Oh, it sure is. But, you know, and the Vikings did do sacrifices, sacrifices. And I mean, there's a very twisted side of it for all the wonderment and the, you know, the beauty of the culture and the fierceness and the drama, there was a dark side.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, again, I mean, that's humanity, right? And with the whole two wolves story, you know? The idea that, you know, we all have that wolf that's all good and, you know, pure and blah, blah, blah. And we also have that wolf in us that's darkness. And which one wins? It's the one that you feed. Classic story. But it's very true. We all have the light and the dark in us, and we have to actively choose kind of what are we going to try to bring into the world. But this has been a great discussion. Yeah, it's, I think we went even a little bit longer than we said we would, but,
because we can't stop talking.
I'm telling you. Jeez, I am telling you.
But we're so good. You are. You rocked it tonight, Michael.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. I love
your take on things.
I got to say, I love the back and forth. I loved that kind of little back and forth, you know. Again, my version of hell is a place where everybody agrees with me and I can't really get into a good discussion about stuff. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Throw in your thoughts and ideas. Hit me up on Facebook. Shoot me an email. If you have any thoughts about the Enlightenment, about the Age of Spiritualism, about kind of all this new metaphysical thought that we have bubbling up, anything you want us to address, let me know. And, we're looking forward to seeing you next week. Any last thoughts, Dr. Vicky?
Well, you know, don't let them push you around out there, folks.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you, everybody. Can't wait to see you next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.